This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO New Orleans, 89.9 on the lakefront, and WRKF in Baton Rouge, 89.3, located on Valley Creek for so many years, started on at another location, French Settlement, in 1980. But both stations have been around a long time and are the preeminent ones as far as public radio goes in Louisiana. And your number is 877-217-5757. And emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow producing. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and we are privileged to have two seasoned Louisiana politicos with us. Troy Hebert on one side of the spectrum, the former state senator, a man who beat Jeff Landry for a Senate seat in Louisiana in 2007, and now they're the best of friends. And Troy Hebert, in addition to being a supporter of the governor, is also bullish on Donald Trump as he hopes the man from Gotham City returns to the White House in 4 months. Stephen Handwerk is with us. For almost a decade, he was the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. Like Troy, he hails from Acadiana, but now lives in Michigan. He not only gave up his post with the Democratic Party, he got out of Louisiana, and Michigan is a swing state. I'm sure he's being bombarded with all kinds of ads that we'll never see or hear in Louisiana, because it's generally considered that Donald Trump will carry our state and get all 8 electoral votes. But Michigan, totally different story. Trump won there in 2016. He won in 2016 and lost in 2020. And quite likely, whoever wins Michigan will win the White House. And let's start with that. And as I stated before, people in Louisiana are far more energized about national politics than they are local politics. And that's evident by Donald Trump getting 1,255,000 votes in 2020. And last year, in a governor's election, Jeff Landry won without a runoff with 537,000 votes. So Stephen Handwerk, Michigan, I'm sure, is a state where you'll see and hear a lot of Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Your thoughts about where we are and why you migrated northward to one of the great states in America, but far away from Bayou country.
You know, it sure is, and it's such a pleasure to be back on with you, Jim. I have to tell you, it is a completely different world up here. I have a TV in my office as I work here, helping all of our state Democratic parties across the nation. And I got to tell you, every commercial break, I have ads from super PACs. I have ads from the campaigns. It is certainly something I am not used to, being in Lafayette, Louisiana for nearly 25 years. So it is certainly something different to see. You know, definitely being in one of the battleground states is certainly something interesting. But it's also really cool to see the amount of investments that are made in states that are battlegrounds, to be able to do some of the best of the best, some of the latest and greatest campaign tactics that are going on up here. And it's great to kind of be on the ground for that, but then also helping marshal our resources across the country.
Again, 877-217-5757. And yesterday on this show, I noted that Nate Silver, one of the great prognosticators, has Donald Trump favored. He believes Trump will win and has him at a 58% chance of winning. And he's been right before. Now, he's basing this not on current polls, which show Harris slightly ahead, even in the swing states, but the fact that Trump generally under polls. He's a person, it's hard for people. It's a small subset, but it's big enough that it could swing the election. People who just don't want to tell a pollster they're in favor of Donald Trump. And we can relate to this in Louisiana based on what happened with David Duke, who always underpolled in his heyday. But another distinguished prognosticator, Alan Lichtman, who has called all but one of the last 12 elections correctly, he's picking Harris, and not only picking her, but says she will win comfortably. So there is a division among people who are supposedly learned in these matters. Troy Hebert, how do you see the race 60 days out?
Well, good morning, Jim and Stephen, and to your listeners. You know, If you recall, about 6 months ago on your show, I said that Biden wouldn't be the nominee, and that came to pass, although that was not wishful thinking on my part, because as I also mentioned to you, I thought that Biden was the easy one for Trump to beat. I think that would have been a beatdown. And now that some of the things you just mentioned, I agree with. I think this is going to be a nail biter. Depending on, it doesn't matter which side you're on. I don't think there's no guarantees in this one. You know, Harris, you know, despite her bad policies, she is a fresh face, and you have to give that to the Democrats for picking somebody who's younger, a fresh face. I think something that Americans were hoping for from the beginning, and not being stuck between two older guys who's been around a while. So I think the race is going to be tight. I definitely believe this is that they better have a good voter turnout. You know, Stephen was talking about the messaging in these swing states. I can only imagine the economic development that's occurring in these swing states. Must be nice.
All right. Well, you referred to, before we go to the phone lines, you referred to the, quote, bad policies of Kamala Harris. Stephen, I'm sure you think her policies are just right. Why?
Well, look, I do. And the reason being is because the vast majority of Americans agree with her policies versus the alternative. You know, it's very clear that we have a very a race that's very clear cut right now. You're either going to vote for Donald Trump, someone who is only really interested in representing himself and his rich friends, or you have someone who's going to be fighting for the Americans. And that's very clear. And that's certainly the messaging that we're seeing, because it's true. So look, I'll agree with Troy on one thing. None of us are sleeping on this race. Not any of us on either side. No one has any sort of calm when it comes to this. We're all going to be working literally until the minute the polls close in every single state across the nation. And so that's why I believe that we'll ultimately end up being successful. But this is not going to be a cakewalk for anyone. Even the states that we're really pulling ahead on in all of the polling, I don't believe it. I believe that it's going to be a lot tighter, and I believe that it's going to be a hard-fought one race, and that we will ultimately end up being victorious.
There is a high-stakes debate from the two major candidates Tuesday night, and Donald Trump won the debate over Joe Biden, and some say it may have cost him the election. If he hadn't debated Biden, Biden quite likely would still be the nominee, and he would be on stage Tuesday, and as we know, debates are not his thing anymore. How significant will this debate be, Troy?
Well, I don't think he should have showed up for the Biden debate, and he shouldn't show up for the Harris debate. I don't think there's anything that Trump has to gain in a debate. I do think there's a tremendous risk of him showing up. Certainly, he's not disciplined enough to be on TV in on a debate. Some people like that about him. Unfortunately, campaigns don't, because if he slips up and he loses his attention and as far as for maybe saying some things that he's going to regret, and I believe that the best thing he can do is come up with an excuse. Maybe he can do like Biden says, he has COVID or something.
You know, Stephen, I actually agree with almost everything Troy just said, but
You know what? I do too. You know what? Jim, you're bringing the right and the left together right now here on Talk Louisiana. I agree. He's not, Trump is certainly not disciplined enough. And the best thing that he's getting right now is getting those microphones shut off. That is a win for him. It's certainly a win for his campaign staff, because I can't even imagine being one of those folks worried about a hot mic incident. So, look, I mean, I do believe that there's a lot riding on this. I also don't believe, I mean, this is going to be really the first time that most Americans are paying attention. I mean, this is pretty famous. We're known in America to not really start caring about politics until after Labor Day. And so I think that we are going to get a lot of attention on this. And I hope people are watching to actually hear what both of the candidates are going to be saying, mm-hmm. rather than just kind of coming from one side or the other and kind of having blinders on just to be able to be encamped on whatever side they come to the table on. I really hope people are going to listen and with an open mind.
Jim on I-12. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. How about we talk about tariffs and how they actually work? because, and let's just use really nice, easy round numbers. If I have a product in China that costs $100 and I add on a $10 tariff, the government of China pays absolutely nothing. The price of the item just goes up to $110, and the consumers and businesses in the United States now pay $110.
All right, Troy, most, if not all, economists worth their salt agree with Jim on this, that Donald Trump is wrong about tariffs actually creating more dollars for the American people. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to give Trump credit in the fact that he recognizes that we're losing the war against China and these other countries in competing. And I think he's trying to find a pathway.
877-217-5757. We'll be back after this 89-second break on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Two seasoned politicos on different sides of former President Trump, and Stephen Handwerk is working for Democratic parties all across the country after leading the Democratic Party as executive director for nearly a decade. He's in Michigan now. And Kamala Harris is now moved ahead in Michigan and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Those three states are critical to any Democrat running for office. And really critical for Donald Trump, but he doesn't have to win all three, most likely. She probably does. 877-217-5757. And a listener notes, I mentioned the disparity as far as interest now when it comes to elections in Louisiana, and it was evident by what happened in the gubernatorial cycle last year when most people, about 65% of the people in the state, just stayed at home, didn't vote. And Jeff Landry won with about 18% of the eligible voters, but it's still a landslide because making the decision not to vote is the same as making the decision to vote. And Hal in Monroe, before we go back to the phone line, Stephen, he notes that, and he's correct, Joe Biden, in defeat, and albeit a landslide defeat in Louisiana in 2020, he got 856,000 votes. So if the Democratic Party had turned out the vote the same way that Biden did in defeat in 2020, Sean Wilson would be the governor of Louisiana and would have won in a landslide. What happened? Both parties had low turnout, but the Democratic Party is guilty of this, and for whatever reason, it was not energized. You weren't here for the last cycle, but what happened?
Well, yeah. And Jim, look, this was a real situation where the last leadership of the Louisiana Democratic Party for the last term was solely focused, it seemed, like fighting Democrats rather than fighting Republicans. So they weren't even showing up to the job. Now we've got a new energetic leadership at our state party that is really doing a lot of work. For the first time in more than a decade, Louisiana actually has a role to play in this federal election. We actually have a congressional district that we need to win, and we're going to win, because that way we can give Kamala Harris the Congress that she needs in order to be able to do the work that we so vitally need as a country. So look, there was certainly a bad turnout, a bad situation for the last go-round, but there was apathy. It was just completely voter apathy. Voters don't turn out unless they hear a message that they respond to. That was plain
All
and
right.
simple.
Okay, 877-217-5757. Please keep your remarks brief as we have some people waiting in line to talk with Troy Hebert and Stephen Handwerk. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was just going to say, I think it's October 1st is the vice presidential debate. Trump couldn't have picked the worst candidate, and Kamala picked the probably best candidate. Question for both of you, how much of a factor do you think vice president choices have in general on the race and will have in this?
All right, what about that, Troy Hebert? Now, and there are people who disagree that certainly J.D. Vance is capable of energizing the Trump base, and he's doing that, but he, of course, has really ticked off a lot of people with his comments like childless cat women and that sort of thing. But Troy Hebert, what about the significance of the vice presidential debate? Will that really move the needle?
Well, I think when it comes to a VP pick, I think there's more of a risk of it hurting the candidate than helping them. So depending on how bad they are, I mean, some people might, you know, think twice about voting if they really don't like them. But as far as for helping them, I don't think it's it moves the needle a lot. I think the past elections have shown that.
And since he got on the ticket, his book, which already was at one time a number one bestseller, has been the best-selling book in the world, Hillbilly Elegy. I'm sure that's in the library of one Stephen Handwerk.
Jim, you got the jokes on Friday. That would be a no. However, you know, look, I am looking at this vice presidential debate. And again, I'll agree with Troy here. Most of the time, vice presidential candidates usually run a risk of hurting the candidate more than they ever do helping a candidate. We certainly saw that with Sarah Palin. We certainly saw that. Now we're seeing that with J.D. Vance. I think we probably couldn't have picked a better vice presidential candidate than Tim Walz. He is just a freaking rock star that, quite frankly, most of us were saying, who the heck is this guy? And so really talking about a perfect launch has just been great. And the way that he's energizing labor across the country, look, I'm in a labor state now, and I got to tell you, folks are just incredibly energized with Governor Walz on the ticket.
All right, Jeff in Terrebonne Parish, you're on Talk Louisiana, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Fine.
A second ago, you guys were talking about how Jeff Landry won the election due to low voter turnout. And I just wanted to point out.
No, I did not say that at all. I didn't say that at all. I said there was low voter turnout. I didn't say he won because of low voter turnout.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the way you phrased it, like had the Democrats got out the vote, then the other candidate would have won landslide.
Well, if they got, well, that's just a numerical thing. And of course, if Republicans had gotten out, he would have gotten 800,000 more votes than he got. So both parties. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I apologize for contorting your words there. Well, as you were saying that, it inspired me to call in and remind everybody, and this is just a theory of my own, you know, Hurricane Ida really hurt this state. Like, I think over 30,000 people have fled. So the voting block that Louisiana was, you know, a couple of years ago is definitely not the same it was now. Like, I have the feeling that a lot of people that tend to vote blue have fled this state because they're just tired of being dead last in education and job growth and overall health and all these things.
All right. You make a point, but it wouldn't explain the wild, and I mean wild, disparity. We have about the same number of registered voters now that we had in 2020, and you can bet, and people are going to be upset with me, but Trump in Louisiana will get as many votes this time as he got last time. Patrick in Innisfil, the States in Baton Rouge, you're on with Troy and Stephen. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, your guest talked about showing up for the job. What about Kamala Harris? She's only done one interview. It was a disastrous interview. She had her lapdog vice president there for, I guess, support animal or something. But, I mean, she needs to do more interviews.
All right. That's fair. I don't agree with all the things that preceded the comment about more interviews. But they're playing it safe, Stephen, which has some risk, too. Troy said that Trump shouldn't participate in the debate. Somebody's telling Kamala Harris not to do any interviews. And at some point, that could come back to hurt her.
Stephen? Well, look, I'm certainly not willing to throw in like that. I think that by being able to stand up an entire presidential race, she has done an amazing job of leading this team forward in being able to do this. I think that her interview, by sitting down with her vice presidential candidate, she's only continuing a tradition. Go back and see. You got to see, you know, Donald Trump sit down with Mike Pence and do his interview. So this is a tradition that has been continued for this race. It is very common to see that. And the only thing that I would say is uncommon right now, I certainly don't agree with Troy. I think that all of our candidates, we cannot give them a pass. They have to show up to debate. I don't care what the race is looking like. I will always be an advocate, no matter if I'm 20 points ahead or 20 points behind. My candidate needs to be sitting down with their opposition and giving their vision in front of voters. It is completely disqualifying, in my opinion, if people don't show up.
I want to get Troy in before we go to the break. Troy, your response to Stephen?
Well, this is the situation. You know, when it comes to policy, Republicans are strong. But when it comes to politics, Democrats are brilliant. And at the end of the day, the whole race is about who wins. And how they get their candidate across the finish line is what counts. Like when they put Biden in the basement last time, and he won. So at the end of the day, whether they show up or they don't show up, the game plan is Democrats have the advantage because they play smart politics. You got to remember, Harris has not even received a single vote to be the president nominee, but yet the Democrats put her up. They've got the deck stacked, and as far as whether they show up or not, Harris is not going on interviews because they understand the calculation is it's not good for them.
877-217-5757. Back with Troy Hebert and Stephen Handwerk with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and with us for a few more moments, Stephen Handwerk, the longtime executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, now working with Democrats all over the country, based in Michigan, and Troy Hebert. He's a Louisianian through and through. He represented his area in the Louisiana Senate, and he beat Jeffrey Martin Landry in the year of 2007 in a close one. And as occasionally happens, but not often, they forged a friendship after running a bruising campaign. And he is a pro-Landry, pro-Trump participant on our program. If you'd like to get in under the wire, keep your remarks brief, but we do have one line open at 877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Comment and a question for Mr. Handwerk. Three magnificent women in top jobs in Michigan, but the all-star in that group, Jocelyn Benson, Harvard Law, Marshall Scholar at Oxford, Dean of Wayne State University, runs two marathons a year. What do you see as her political future, sir?
Stephen, what about...
I couldn't have said that any better. I am such a huge fan of the women that are representing the state, and soon we will have Alyssa Slotkin joining us in the United States Senate. But yeah, Jocelyn, she is ridiculously qualified. She is so incredibly good. Every time I've seen her at any of the events, she has just knocked it out of the park. I think that she'll be able to do anything. And also, too, I would not sleep on her. I am sure she's going to go on to do some really big things. So, yeah, thanks for giving the shout out.
But in politics, everything is about timing. And I just read a story again last night about John Edwards. The New York Times found him in a Chicago bar during the Democratic convention. And remember, he was the golden boy, and he almost was vice president. If Kerry had won in Ohio, he would have been vice president of the United States. He leaves in scandals, never heard from again. And then you got a guy, Stephen and Troy, like Mike Johnson, who's a brilliant fellow. But I wouldn't have thought he wouldn't have been my first pick if I were saying who's going to be Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in the year of 2024. But Troy, he did it.
Well, because you hit the nail on the head. Timing is everything. I mean, my money was on Steve Scalise for Speaker. He was lined up for it. And it goes to just show you how politics works that, you know, Scalise, I think, was the odds on favorite. And then a sleeper from out of nowhere in Louisiana, and thank God it was still in Louisiana, popped up, and now him and Scalise are working hand-in-hand together, running the House. I tell you what, politics is an interesting game.
Stephen, what do you think about Mike Johnson?
I certainly think that that was generous, running the House. I don't really know of any accomplishments the Republican Party has been able to bring or to go to their voters with. They haven't been able to accomplish anything. And certainly, Mike Johnson wasn't anyone's first choice, as we saw with all of the balloting that they had to go through in order to find a speaker. It was really basically when the music stopped, whoever had the chair left was going to be speaker. So I don't know that I would really be going crazy about that. You know, Mike Johnson is definitely too far extreme. And that's why I left Louisiana. It was no longer safe for my husband and I to live there. It just wasn't. And seeing the horrible draconian policies that Jeff Landry has put in effect, there is a mass exodus of folks leaving the state. Now, granted, that doesn't accomplish or that hasn't brought on all of the losses, but it certainly is contributing to it. I think a lot of businesses are questioning whether they are going to want to relocate to Louisiana with the policies that are in place.
Cliff in Baton Rouge, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Cliff.
Hi, Jim. Hey, listen, quick question. You guys were talking about tariffs a little while ago, and I want to know, has anybody calculated the effect of tariffs, of what they have done to help increase the inflation? Because it seems to me that since the tariffs were put on when Trump was in office, prices began really going up a lot.
All right. And I'm sure that's a contributing factor. But, Stephen, Joe Biden hasn't done anything to get rid of those tariffs. He hasn't done a thing. So he must like them too. Stephen.
Well, again, I don't know that I would necessarily go that far, Jim. But what I would say is that tariffs, to the earlier point that I believe Troy had made and that the caller had called in and made, at the end of the day, all tariffs do is get passed on, and it increases the price of what you're going to go and buy at the grocery store or what you're going to go and buy at the electronics store. So it's really kind of sad that we're doing that. There's other ways for us to compete, and how we're doing that now, it, through Joe Biden and Kamala Harris with their policies, we're actually making stuff Louisiana.
Well, let's see if she gets rid of the tariffs.
Across the country.
Troy, I don't think she'll get rid of the tariffs because she is courting labor, and labor unions through the years have liked tariffs in some cases. And Ronald Reagan would be apoplectic at his party being the party of tariffs. What in the heck's happened, Troy Hebert?
Well, first of all, you know, when it comes to the trade wars, I don't think trade wars are a partisan issue. I would like to think that both parties would love things to be made in America. The problem is we both know it's not a level playing field because of the environmental laws and regulations we have that are so strict here and are so lax in other countries. So I don't think it's a partisan issue. So Trump might have put them on, and as you mentioned, Jim, Biden didn't take them off, because at the end of the day, I just pray to God that both parties are for made in America.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Mr. Hebert, if we don't buy foreign products, they can't afford to buy our products. Mr. Hebert, when Trump was president, the Republican Congress reduced the corporate tax rate, I believe, from 35% to 21%. Now Trump wants to reduce it further, from 21% to 15%. Morgan Stanley did a study and found 43% of the corporate tax cuts, they were used by corporations to buy shares back and increase pay and bonuses for corporate executives.
All right. Well, Trump does want to cut corporate taxes, and Harris wants to raise them. So is there a middle ground here, Troy Hebert?
Well, it depends. You know that old saying, where you stand depends on where you sit. If you're working for a corporation and the corporation goes under because they tax too high, then you might not be for that. But I can tell you this, when you lower taxes on business overall, businesses prosper, they hire people. And you're talking about a huge defender of the little guy in my time in office. And I can assure you, if the big guy's doing well, the little guy's doing well, because the big guy is hiring the little guy to do work.
But tax cuts have shown many, many times that they increase the deficit. And I heard Trump last night say that he would actually wipe out the deficit in this next term. Stephen Handwerk, is that pie in the sky, or is the Donald on to something here?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd say he was smoking something, because there's no way that the math is math in there. At the end of the day, the way he says he's going to do that is by tariffs. And as we've already established through multiple conversations, you're not going to do anything with the deficit with the tariff increases. So that's just nonplussed. In order to be able to give that money back or be able to tax less, the problem is that it never trickles down. All of the trickle-down economics that we have been told about, we never get it down to the workers. And now the workers are standing up for themselves across the nation. We have seen that happen. So at the end of the day, we need to be more responsible to the workers, because the workers are the ones that are powering the economy. They're the ones showing up every day. They're the ones punching in and doing the work and making the company successful. Not one company would be successful if they didn't have good employees.
Final caller for Stephen and Troy, Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. Just two short questions. You know, it's always been, you know, I know who I'm voting for, but it's always been touted that we basically are given candidates and we really don't choose it. Do you think this was a squeeze play? Because, like you said, when she ran for president the first time, very little support, but we've been basically given this candidate.
All right. Is that fair to say that she's an accidental nominee, Stephen, or is Kamala Harris fully up to the task and would have had a viable, if not have been the favorite, if Biden had not run from the start?
Look, she is completely viable because she was there. You have to remember that Biden didn't only win this last election. She did, too. They voted for her as well. Her name was on the ballot. For the electors were chosen in every single one of the states. They were not only voting for the presidential candidate, but they were also voting for the vice presidential candidate. And if you want to go back to those early days of where she was first putting her foot out to become known nationally, yeah, at the end of the day, she wasn't in the front of that line. It ended up going to somebody else. But guess what? Now she has proven herself. She has proven herself to be a fighter. She's proven herself to be someone who's showing up every day.
Troy, you don't like Kamala Harris, but is it style? Is it substance? Is it a combination of the two? What makes you dislike her so intensely?
Well, first of all, I never said that, Jim. It's not that I dislike her. I just don't like her policies, and I think she was one of the most progressive senators when she was up there. Personally, I'm sure she's a very nice lady. It seems that she is. But when her policies of defunding the police, of raising taxes, of increasing the capital gains taxes, all of those things.
I don't think she's not going to defund the police, but keep going.
She said
that was a very nuanced remark, and it was made in right after George Floyd. But please continue. There are other issues. Go ahead.
Let's be fair, though, Jim. It's funny how when Trump says something is gospel, when Harris says it, well, it was just a mistake.
Well, Trump says it over and over and over and over.
Well, okay, so the number of times he says it, I guess, makes a difference. But at the end of the day, it's just not fair, Jim. You can't have it both ways. And I think the rules are different. And let me just tell you, this is what I think Trump faces. First of all, he's a white male. She's a female of color. The rules are different for those two. And that's why in his debate, he better be very, very careful on how he shows.
All right, I'd like to bring Stephen in on that. Is that fair? That's something that I'm sure many think, but is that fair, Stephen?
I really don't think. First off, I will agree that the rules are different. It is much more difficult for a woman to succeed. She's got to work harder. She's got to be better than every single guy out there in order for her to even get the opportunity. So, look, I agree that the rules are a little bit different. But
all right, we got to go. But you've been a very good guest, and we'll be calling again soon for Troy Hebert, Stephen Handwerk, back with Jan Moeller, and we'll get his take on what's going on in our world. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and the last quarter hour is with Jan Moeller, who for the last 9 years has been head of what was the Louisiana Budget Project, now uses the moniker Invest Louisiana. And Jan logged 13 years with the Times-Picayune as the Capitol reporter. He does, of course, know a lot about national politics. He worked for the great Jack Anderson for several years in Washington, one of the finest national reporters of all time. And we are 60 days away from an election. So if you have something on your mind regarding the election, I'm sure Jan will be more than happy to take your query. But he is an authority on what's happening with state politics. And come Sunday, it will be, actually, it's tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the 10-month mark for Jeff Landry as governor of Louisiana. Your thoughts about the first 10 months, Jan?
Well, first of all, Jim, thank you for having me on your show. It's great to be here. I think Jeff Landry...
Actually, I misspoke. It's only 8 months. Only eight months. Yeah. So 2/3 of a year for Jeff Landry come tomorrow.
Well, I think Jeff Landry has had a pretty decent honeymoon so far, because he's been able to, obviously, the first big focus was his special session on crime. That was the thing he ran on. They were able to get that through. there's been a lot of the culture war stuff happening, which is, I think, where he made his mark, both as attorney general, as a member of Congress. But things are about to get a lot more difficult, I think, for Jeff Landry, because what we're coming up on next is, of course, a fiscal session. If you remember, the one big thing that Jeff Landry did not get during the spring session was a constitutional convention. That was a big thing that he was pushing, that his backers were pushing. That bill got halfway through the process, and the Senate thankfully said no thank you. They wanted to rush a rewrite of the Constitution. The reason they wanted to do that is because we have a huge budget shortfall coming up next year, and that is going to require some really difficult choices by not just Jeff Landry, but the legislature as well. And as we speak right now, Jim, the House Appropriations Committee is doing something that I haven't seen them do in the 21 years that I've been in Louisiana, which is they are holding hearings on next year's budget 10 months before that budget gets enacted. Usually these hearings happen in the spring, but right now the Appropriations Committee is already looking at what kind of cuts they're going to have to make next year if the legislature doesn't find some other way of fixing this fiscal cliff. So we're going to have, you know, Jeff Landry is going to have some very difficult choices coming up in the next few months, and it's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Kathleen in New Orleans. Kathleen, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Thank you for calling.
Well, this may be off, not on subject, but I've started looking into the IMTT expansion of the ammonia. It'll be an ammonia plant related to their ammonia storage and transportation.
All right, what's your question?
Well, I know the residents are against it.
All right, that's really not a question, but environmental matters. I think that's what Kathleen's driving at. There is some concern from those who were in part of the green movement that this administration is not charitable to that movement. Is that fair, or is it too early to tell, John Mueller?
I think that's absolutely fair, and I think one of the things we've seen happen in, you know, the so-called Cancer Alley area between Baton Rouge and New Orleans is that a lot of these neighborhoods that have seen petrochemical companies move in and create a lot of pollution, maybe not a lot of jobs for local residents. Those residents are starting to speak up about that. Unfortunately, Jeff Landry, one of the first things he did was roll back some of the very important reforms that happened under Governor John Bel Edwards with respect to the industrial tax exemption program. You know, Louisiana has one of the most generous tax breaks in anywhere in the world for manufacturing corporations. Under John Bel Edwards, companies that got these tax breaks were required to create or retain jobs as a condition of getting that tax break. Jeff Landry did away with that requirement. So he didn't roll back the reforms completely, but he made some important rollbacks. And I think certainly these companies need to be paying their fair share. But a lot of these zoning concerns, I think that becomes obviously a local matter to some extent.
Thank you for calling, Kathleen. Lonnie in New Orleans. Hello, Lonnie. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Jan. Thank you for your work. I was hoping you could unpack a little on what the Department of Health is proposing in terms of reductions in the next fiscal year. Some of what I've read in the last week has been kind of concerning. Thank you.
Absolutely. And that's thank you, Lonnie, for that question, because, you know, last Friday, the Department of Health came in front of the House Appropriations Committee. Again, an unprecedented situation where they're already talking about the FY25-26 budget. And the health department was asked, you know, what would you do if we cut $100 million from your agency? Well, it turns out if you cut $100 million, that gets rid of federal funds as well. So it would be about a $330 million cut. And if that happens, then there are going to be severe cuts to programs that serve elderly, serve people with disabilities, serve children with special needs. A lot of these programs are kind of outside the regular Medicaid program, but they are absolutely critically important to not just the people who receive these services, but to the families of the people receiving their services, you know, allowing them to go to work and so forth. So it has an economic ripple effect when you cut back on some of these programs. I think the important thing to understand is that we are at the very beginning of the debate, and these cuts do not have to happen. You know, the legislature created the fiscal cliff with tax policies that they put in place years ago, and the legislature can resolve the fiscal cliff without making the kind of budget cuts that would severely hurt people with low incomes.
Are you an advocate of continuing the 0.45% sales tax?
Well, I think we should either renew those sales taxes, and it's that, and it's a business utility tax that's also expiring. We should either renew those taxes, or we should replace the revenue with other sources of revenue. But the thing we shouldn't do is cut our way to a balanced budget, because even with the budget we have this year, when there's no shortfall, we still haven't given teachers a permanent pay raise in 2 years.
We had basically 8 years of what you're fearing under Bobby Jindal. How did that work out?
Well, I think it didn't work out well for Bobby Jindal. More importantly, it didn't work out great for people of Louisiana. You know, we're 9 years removed from the Jindal administration, and our universities are still recovering. Our public schools still haven't caught up. There is still a lot of residue from the damage that those budget cuts did. Unfortunately, a lot of the legislators who lived through the pain of those budget cuts, they're not in the legislature anymore. So there's a new generation of policymakers that's going to find out, I think, as early as next year, that making cuts to the budget is not a game. It's not an easy thing. It might sound good on paper, but when you start making cuts, you affect programs that affect people, voters, and mostly people with low incomes who really need the services that the state provides.
Patricia in Baton Rouge. Patricia, you're on with Jan Moeller of Invest Louisiana.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if you had any idea if Cleo Fields a shoe-in for U.S. Representative District 6, or is there a chance that someone else will win?
Cleo Fields is a shoe-in, yes. He will win that race. Now, he could be forced into a runoff, but I doubt that, too. But
district.
Well, yeah, and Cleo, of course, is a guy who's been around long enough to make lots of friends and more than a few enemies. But I would have to say that he is an example of how somebody can grow with the job. He's now a statesman. He knows what's going on in the world.
Yeah, no, he's always been, I think, an astute politician. Certainly, he's the heavy favorite. I learned a long time ago not to just trust the pundits. The voters sometimes have their
ways
of making up their minds. Joseph Gao wasn't on anybody's radar screen.
He was running against a congressman under indictment. But there are two predictions I feel very comfortable in making: that Donald Trump will win Louisiana and that Cleo Fields will win the 6th district. But what about the call for the end of the state income tax? That hasn't gone away. That's still out there. You say we have to find new ways of revenue if we're going to cut. Well, that's not a way to find revenue, is it?
I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but we're not going to eliminate the personal income tax in Louisiana. I mean, that is stuff for... maybe it makes a nice headline or make nice clickbait, but I think even the governor and Secretary of Revenue are acknowledging that that's not going to happen, for the simple reason that we raise $4.5 billion every year through the personal income tax. So if you get rid of the income tax, you're going to have to replace that revenue with something else. And when you do that, because this is money that pays for our public schools, our universities, healthcare services, the kind of thing that nobody in Baton Rouge is going to be willing to cut. So nobody, I don't think there's a politician alive in Louisiana who can cut the amount of money that we raise from the personal income tax. So if you're not going to have the income tax, you have to raise that money somewhere else.
Thank you, Jan Moeller. Let's do this again. Jan knows his stuff, and we'll be calling on him, and we're appreciative of you listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.